There was a horrendous tanker truck collision in Tishomingo County in 1994. 5 teenagers were trapped in a car and burned to death. Since they were minors, Chancery Court had jurisdiction. One sitting chancellor was related to one of the victims. The other chancellor was dying of brain cancer. Judge Attlee got the call and presided over a trial that lasted 2 days before it was settled for $7,400,000. One-third went to the attorneys for the teenagers, the rest to their families. Ray set the file on the judge's sofa next to the annexation case. He was sitting on the floor of the study, the newly polished floor, under the vigilant gaze of General Forrest. He had a vague idea of what he was doing, but no real plan on how to proceed. Go through the files, pick out the ones that involved money, see where the trial might lead. The cash he had found hidden less than 10 feet away had come from somewhere. His cell phone rang. It was a Charlottesville alarm company with a recorded message that a break-in was in progress at his apartment. He jumped to his feet and talked to himself while the message finished. The same call would simultaneously go to the police and to Corey Crawford. Seconds later, Crawford called him. "I'm on the way there," he said, and sounded like he was running. It was almost 9:30 CST, 10:30 in Charlottesville. Ray paced through the house, thoroughly helpless. 15 minutes passed before Crawford called him again. "I'm here," he said, "with the police. Somebody jammed the door downstairs, then jammed the one to the den. That set off the alarm. They didn't have much time. Where do we check?" "There's nothing particularly valuable there," Ray said, trying to guess what a thief might want. "No cash, jewelry, art, hunting rifles, gold or silver." "TV, stereo, microwave, everything's here," Crawford said. "They scattered books and magazines, knocked over the table by the kitchen phone, but they were in a hurry. Anything in particular?" "No, nothing I can think of." Ray could hear a police radio squawking in the background. "How many bedrooms?" Crawford asked as he moved through the apartment. 2. "Mine is on the right." "All the closet doors are open. They were looking for something. Any idea what?" "No," Ray answered. "No sign of entry in the other bedroom," Crawford reported, then began talking with 2 cops. "Hang on," he told Ray, who was standing in the front door, looking through the screen, motionless, and trying to think of the fastest way home. The cops and Crawford decided it was a quick strike by a pretty good thief who got surprised by the alarm. He jammed the 2 doors with minimal damage, realized there was an alarm, raced through the place looking for something in particular, and when he didn't find it, he kicked a few things for the hell of it and fled. He or they could have been more than one.
"You need to be here to tell the police if anything is missing, and to do a report," Crawford said.
"I'll be there tomorrow," Ray said. "Can you secure the place tonight?"
"Yeah, we'll think of something.
Call me after the cops leave." He sat on the front steps and listened to the crickets while yearning to be at Cheney's self-storage, sitting in the dark with one of the judge's guns, ready to blast away at anyone who came near him. 15 hours away by car, 3.5 by private plane. He called Fogg Newton, and there was no answer. His phone startled him again.
"I'm still in the apartment," Crawford said.
"I don't think this is random," Ray said.
"You mentioned some valuables, some family stuff at Cheney's self-storage?"
"Yeah. Any chance you could watch the place tonight?"
"They got security out there. Guards and cameras. Not a bad outfit."
Crawford sounded tired and not enthusiastic about napping in a car all night. "Can you do it?"
"I can't get in the place. You have to be a customer."
"Watch the entrance." Crawford grunted and breathed deeply.
"Yeah, I'll check on it. Maybe call a guy in to watch it."
"Thanks. I'll call you when I get to town tomorrow." He called Cheney's and there was no answer. He waited 5 minutes, called again, counted 14 rings, then heard a voice.
"Cheney's security, Murray speaking."
He very politely explained who he was and what he wanted. He was leasing 3 units, and there was a bit of concern because someone had vandalized his downtown apartment, and could Mr. Murray please pay special attention to 14B, 37F, and 18R? "No problem," said Mr. Murray, who sounded as if he was yawning into the phone. "Just a little jumpy," Ray explained.
"No problem," mumbled Mr. Murray.
It took 1 hour and 2 drinks for the edginess to relent. He was no closer to Charlottesville. There was the urge to hop in the rental car and race through the night, but it passed. He preferred to sleep and try to find an airplane in the morning. Sleep, though, was impossible, so he returned to the trial files. The judge had once said he knew little about zoning law because there was so little zoning in Mississippi, and virtually none in the 6 counties of the 25th Chancery District. But somehow someone had cajoled him into hearing a bitterly fought zoning case in the city of Columbus. The trial lasted for 6 days, and when it was over, an anonymous phone caller threatened to shoot the judge, according to his notes. Threats were not uncommon, and he'd been known to carry a pistol in his briefcase over the years. It was rumored that Claudia carried one, too. "You'd rather have the judge shooting at you than his court reporter," ran the conventional wisdom. The zoning case almost put Ray to sleep. But then he found a gap, the black hole he'd been digging for, and he forgot about sleep. According to his tax records, the judge was paid $8,110 in January 1999 to hear a case in the 27th Chancery District. The 27th comprised 2 counties on the Gulf Coast, a part of the state the judge cared little for. The fact that he would voluntarily go there for a period of days struck Ray as quite odd. Odder still was the absence of a trial file. He searched the 2 boxes and found nothing related to a case on the coast, and with his curiosity barely under control, he plowed through the other 38 or so. He forgot about his apartment and the self-storage and whether or not Mr. Murray was awake or even alive, and he almost forgot about the money. A trial file was missing.